The following presentation was made available by Inspiration Express as part of the Kisser Shulchan Aruch calendar program. There are many more free lectures and resources available at www.kitzer365.org. Today's lecture is given by Rabbi Micha Cohen.
Simon Reish Beis. We're continuing now in the Simon to learn about the laws of Tumas Kayanim, which is, we know that there's a prohibition for a Kayan to be in contact with a deceased person. Now, besides carrying or touching the deceased person, being under the same tent or the same roof as a person that is deceased is a problem. And we said that even if it's many rooms, from room to room, if it's all open, it's a place for the tumma to escape from one room to the next, it's still a problem. As long as there's an opening of a tafach by a tafach, which would be 3.5 inches by 3.5 inches, or if it's a certain types of openings, let's say if it's for air, then even a smaller amount. Now, based on this halacha, the kitzer is telling us an important point in Siv Zion. Now, before we just get to the kitzer's point in Siv Zion, I'd like to review one more point, which is that we mentioned last time that even though if there is no opening to where the tumah is, to where the impurity is, that the tumah is not gonna go from one room to the next. We did mention that if the tumah is gonna leave, if the deceased person's body is gonna be taken out a certain way, or they haven't specified how it's gonna be taken out, then we say that even if the door is closed, then midrabanan, we consider it like it's open. Now, having said all that, it's important to understand that midaraisa, the tumah only goes if there's actual opening. Midrabanan, if the mace is going to go out that way or could go out that way, then it would still be a conduit to the tumah, and the kohen wouldn't be allowed to be on the other side as well. Siv Zayin, kohen shehu b'bayis o b'chedesh hadlasos v'chaloinos segurim. So a person is in a room, and he's completely closed in. The door is closed, there are no open windows, or anything like that. But ba'ofen she'ein b'pesach pasuach tafach, there's no opening that's a tafach large. U'b'chaloin einakav kepunyoin, and there's no opening in a window, the amount of a punyoin, which is a smaller amount, like the size of a coin, and that would be like a place to let in air, which would also be a problem. And the person here is that there's an area of mace. We mentioned in the previous year, the problem was that because the houses were very close together, so it would travel along the overhangs of the roofs, and therefore, basically, if he were to open the door, he would be letting in the tumah. But if he's going to open the door, or open the window, then the tumah could come through. Also, liftayach, he's not allowed to open it. Hel yishar sham, he should wait there. K'mayu shehu, as he is, at sheyotzi es hameis, until they remove the mace. He calls man she'em pesach tafach, because as long as it doesn't have the amount of a tafach, ein hatumah nechnasas, the tumah is not going to go in. Because sheyiftach tikanes, when he will open it, the tumah will come in. So he's basically going to be stuck in the room until the issue of the tumah has been resolved. Now, this is also an important point that, let's say, a kohen is in the hospital, especially in Eretz Yisrael, where the majority of the people are Jewish, and when he's in the hospital, they find out that someone died on the floor. So what they need to do is they need to close his door, so then he'll stay in the room until they remove the person that's deceased from the floor. Now, there's an important tshuva from the Yehuda that the Sha'ar Mitzion Balacha over here quotes, which he mentions a few small points, which is important to understand. Firstly, glass, a window with a window pane in it, so the tumah does not go through it. You need an actual opening. So therefore, even in a situation where you have a door that's closed, but it's a glass and you could see through, that's not a problem. So you could theoretically be actually looking at the mace through the window, but it's not going to be a problem because there's no actual opening. The other thing that he points out is that, say you have this kohen that's in the room by himself, and someone needs to come in or come out. So what can you do? If you're going to open the door, the Tumah's going to come in. But the Nayib Yudah says that if there's a double door, so then that would alleviate the problem, because the person coming in will go into this room in between, close the door. Now it's not open to the where the room was, where the kohen is, and it goes through. In other words, the Tumah, to be a problem, needs to be connected to the mace. It's not like the air itself becomes Tumah, and now the double door won't help. The double door will help because at no one point will it be connected to where the mace is. The Kitzur continues now with the laws of Tumas Kainim and Sif Ches. Also, the coin lekare b'seich arba amis shal mace or shal kever. A coin is not allowed to come close within 4 amis, which is about 6 feet, to the mace or to a grave. Now, we're obviously not talking that they're in the same airspace, that they're under the same roof, because then we have a problem of Tumas Oil. We're talking about in the open air, let's say a kohen's at a funeral, right? So he needs to be careful that when they go to the Beis HaKfaras, when they go to the cemetery, that he should not be within 4 amas of a kever. Now, the reason given for this, there's a number of reasons, but the basic idea is that we're afraid, we don't want the kohen to come too close, because he could accidentally end up being mahil, sort of leaning over or touching the grave and making himself tameh. Now, the Paiskim discussed, the Sefer Melam L'Hoyl and others, that if it helps some sort of mechitz, if there's a partition, it seems that a partition would help, because then that would also separate him from that. So therefore, if we'll be on the other side of the fence of the cemetery, then it would, even though he's within 4 amas of the grave, then that would be okay. Another important point that the Paiskim point out is that when it comes to the laws of Laig L'Rosh that we learned elsewhere, that one's not supposed to wear tzitzis or tefillin outwardly in the Beis HaKfaras in the cemetery out of respect to the deceased, the halach is that it's in an entire cemetery, even now within 4 feet, 4 amas of a grave. Whereas over here, it seems to be only within 4 amas of a grave, but say there's a lot of room in the cemetery, so a kohen could be in the actual cemetery if he's not within 4 amas. That's what they point out from this halacha. Now, the reason is because when it comes to Laig L'Rosh, when it comes to not being respectful, it's not an actual Isser. So therefore, we're afraid that people aren't going to be as careful. That's one reason given. Whereas when it comes to Tumas Kainim, the whole issue is just that he will actually, by mistake, touch the kever, and that people know that they're not allowed to do that. So therefore, as long as he's not within 4 amas, then we're not concerned. So the Kitzur continues to qualifies this problem. The mace is resting in a place that it's going to stay there. Because what happens when a kohen had a funeral, as we mentioned before? So I mentioned that you can't be within 4 amos of a grave, but what about from the actual procession? So then already, you could be within 4 amos, because the whole problem is only once it's in a specific place. That's when we say it. The space around it becomes Aser. With Eis Amir Tzidak Hadin, and therefore at the time when they recite Tzidak Hadin, Av Kishem Amidim Aisai, even though they stop the procession for those minutes, Ein Shom Kviyasai, it's just there temporarily, Ein Tzirichin L'Srachik, and they don't have to separate Kim Abra Tfachim, only four Tfachim, which is a much less amount, because a Tefach is around 3.5 inches, so it's like around 1.5 feet, which is much, much less than the 6 feet mentioned before. Now, it is important to point out that although the Kitzur here says that one is allowed to be much closer than 4 amas away from the procession, that many times it goes under places there are trees overhanging. Now, the trees overhanging, if there are a lot of leaves on them and they're close enough in proximity, then that could be like an oil, that could be like a roof, and there'll be a problem for the kohen to be under it. So therefore, it's true that we don't have this issue of being within 4 amas. One has to be careful if there's any overhanging trees, because then he could really be under the same airspace on the same oil as the mace. Sif Yud deals with a very important halacha that comes up very much, especially not in Eretz Yisrael, in America or any other place where there's a lot of non-Jews, and that is, what is the status of a non-Jewish body as far as a kohen being in its presence? Now, we know that if a non-Jewish body is metame, it creates tumah if it's carried or if it's touched. However, if a person's in the same oil, if a person's in the same airspace as it, then there's a machlokes, there's a dispute. Now, let's see how the Kitzur brings it down, then we'll discuss the ramifications. The Kitzur says the following, Yesh Aymrim, some say, the Gam Meis Nachri Metam B'Oil, that even a non-Jewish body is Metam B'Oil, contracts Tumah, being in the same airspace. Yesh Lazar Kedifreim, and one should be careful like what they say, Shalelech Al Kever Nachri, not to go on the grave of a non-Jew, when we call Shekeng, Kishi Yesh Lachos Shema Gam Mumr Nekvasham. So first of all, the Kitzur says that there's a dispute, but he recommends being stringent about it. And then he adds that sometimes it's possible that you could have a Jewish person who unfortunately went astray and that he's buried among non-Jews, and therefore the person might actually be Jewish. And this is what he adds, and Mikol Shekein Kishyesh Lachosh, that if there's reason to suspect, Shema Gam Mumer Nekvasham, that a strange Jewish person was buried there, Shem Mumer Dinuk Yisrael, because a person, even though they unfortunately went away from Torah Mitzvahs, they still have a status of a Jewish person, that their body is metalim ba'oil, that according to all opinions, their body contracts tumah, even being in the same airspace. V'gam havlad she'yaldu mumeres me'nachri demekmo Yisrael, and also say a woman who went astray, her child would also have the din of Yisrael and create an issue. Now the wording of the Kitzur is yesh lizar, that it's proper to be careful. Now if you look in the Ramah, when he brings this halacha, seems to say that the main halacha is that we are not concerned that it's going to contract tumah being in the same airspace. However, he says it's a good idea to be stringent. Now, there are different ways of looking at it among the Paiskim. Some Paiskim view it as very clearly we Paskim that a non-Jewish person is not matan ba'oil, and it's really only a very big stringency to be careful about it. While others seem to look at it more as a machlaikis and feel that it's more important to be careful about it. Now, some of the major ramifications that this has would be as follows. First of all, there's a lot of discussion in the Paiskim about, in the more contemporary Paiskim, about a kohen becoming a doctor. Now, what's the problem? The problem is that in the course of studying medicine, one has to dissect a cadaver, a dead body. Now, we can assume, at least in America, that the vast majority of those people are going to be not Jewish, so therefore one could assume that the bodies can be from a non-Jew. Now, if we're going to go according to the opinion that a kohen cannot be in the same airspace as it, so obviously there's not going to be much of a way out, because if they have to be in the same, witness the dissection, they have to be in the same airspace, so then they're going to have a serious problem. However, if we go according to the opinions that it's not matan b'oil, which according to the Ramah, it seems that's the main opinion, that it does not contract tumah by being in the same airspace, so then if that's the case, then if the kohen would have to do an actual dissection, then that would be a problem, because mago masa, touching and moving, is still going to be a problem, so that would not be permitted. However, if the requirement would only be for the kohen to just view the dissection, just watch it, but not actually do it, so then that would be okay. Now, it's interesting because there's a tshuva, there's a responsa from the Yavitz, who lived in the 1700s, about a Jewish person who actually was in a medical school, and it's a very fascinating tshuva where he discusses with the Yavitz his issue that there were dissections of animals taking place on Shabbos. And the question was, could he be there or not, and is moving it considered to be muksa and having benefit from it? And And there's a whole discussion back and forth between the Yavetz and this medical student as far as what he could do on Shabbos, and the Yavetz strongly discourages him from being there on Shabbos. But I do believe that the Yavetz, in his discussion, also considers viewing a dissection not to be considered deriving benefit, because that would be a different issue about what about deriving benefit from the body of a person that passed away. Now, as far as our discussion of a kayin, it would seem that if one does not have to touch the actual body and could only view it, then they might be able to rely on the Ramah. That seems to say the main opinion is that they're allowed to be in the same airspace as a non-Jewish person. Another application to this is the common situation where a person is driving in the car and they're going to pass under the trees of a cemetery that overhang a cemetery. Now, if that cemetery is a Jewish cemetery and the tree is considered to be an oil, it's considered to be like a tent, so then you can have a problem because you're in the same airspace as a Jewish body. Now, what about if it's in a non-Jewish cemetery? So it would seem that would have to do with this difference of opinion, that if you hold that a non-Jewish person does not give off a tumah to the extent that being in the same airspace is a problem, then you wouldn't have a problem. But the question is, people want to be stringent, like the kitchen mentioned, that it's permitted to be stringent. So there could be two factors to keep in mind. One fact to keep in mind is that the whole concept that leaves of a tree acting as an oil, acting as a tent, is not so simple, because in order to be considered the roof of a tent or something like that, it needs to have a certain amount of strength. And it's questionable if the leaves have that level of strength. It could be not all the time. You might have the big trunk of the tree that's very thick. That might have to be strong. But the leaves itself, they have to be able to take a certain weight that the halacha prescribes, and they might not have it. And even if they do have it, it may be only rabbinic, maybe only the rabbanon. So besides for the fact that whether or not a non-Jew is metama b'oil, contracts, gives off tumah in the same airspace, we have another dispute, or question at least, as far as this transferring of tumah through under a tree. It might not even apply in this situation, or at least it may be only rabbinic. Now, another thing we have is another fascinating discussion is, and this gets into the whole question about airplanes flying over Kvarim, and that would be that being in a car could be considered that it's being in its own oil, being in its own tent. Now, the only problem is that oil zarek is lavishmei oil, that a moving tent loses its status as an oil. So therefore, even though if a person's within one chamber, it would act as a barrier between them and the tumah. So therefore, if one's in their car and the car is parked, that could be a barrier between them and the tumah around them. Let's say if there's a funeral passing by, but when the car is moving, or let's say a plane is flying, then it seems that it loses that status. So therefore, it wouldn't help. However, according to the opinion of the Mishnah Lamelech, if something is not flying through the air but rolling like a car, then it still is considered stationary, and it would still protect from the tumah. So therefore, if you're going to look at a car as an oil zarek, I'm sorry, as not an oil zarek, as its own domain, but and we're going to look at the fact that it's moving not to be a problem because it's rolling on the ground, then we consider the car is going to block the tumah. The only issue is that a car is made out of metal, at least the outside of it, and if the car is made out of metal, then it could be that it doesn't help. But assuming that we're dealing with something that's not made of metal, let's say, then the fact that the car is moving along the ground, according to many opinions, would make it that it's not a good barrier. But we do have the opinion of the Mishnah Malach, who say that it's a sufficient barrier. So basically, we have three variables that we could discuss. We have the fact that it could be that a non-Jewish body does not give off tumah under this tent. We have the question about the trees, if the trees transfer the tumah, or at least only midrabanan, only rabbinically, and it could be also, at least according to a minority opinion, that the car itself could be its own rishus, its own domain, and that could also block the tumah. So this is again how these things sort of come together, why these differences of opinion are important. One of the very common questions that come up over here is a kohen going into a hospital. Now, based on what we're saying, that we had mentioned previously about the question of room to room, if the tumah is spreading from room to room, is that a Torah prohibition or a rabbinic prohibition? And that seemed to be a whole discussion. But now we have a few more factors. First of all, you have a doubt whether or not someone has passed away, right? Because we say a person has a cheskas chai, a person, you know, we assume that a person is alive until known otherwise. So let's say our concern is that, say, somewhere on the floor, someone's going to die, or say somewhere in the hospital, there's a dead body. So we may not have to assume that, because who said someone's going to die while this person's in the hospital? Now, besides for that, if many of the people are non-Jewish, so then we have this whole discussion that we have now, whether or not Tumas Oil, whether or not being in the same airspace applies for a non-Jewish body. That's another point that we have. So basically we have the point that room to room may be rabbinic. We have the point that maybe we don't have to assume that someone's going to die. And then we have the point that if it's a non-Jewish person, that the tumah doesn't necessarily get transferred. So because of all these three things, if a person doesn't know for sure that they're going to be in the same proximity as a person that died, then it could be that these three things together would be enough to rely upon if a person has a real good reason to be in a hospital. And just to mention one more thing when we're on the subject of the hospitals, and that is that we know when it comes to the laws of Tumah and Tahara, whether or not something became ritually impure or not, there's a concept that Safek Tumah Bereshus HaRabim Tar, that if the doubt came about in a public area, the Torah tells us a very interesting rule that we don't have elsewhere, that if it happened in a public area, then it's assumed to be okay. And if it happened in a private area, it's assumed to be not okay. This is a unique rule we have in the laws of Tumah and Tahara, unlike other places in the Torah, right? If you're not sure if something is kosher or not, then if it's a Torah prohibition, you have to assume, you have to be concerned that maybe it's not kosher. If it's a rabbinic prohibition, then you could be more lenient. But over here we have a new rule, that it has to do with being a public domain. In a public domain we are lenient, in a private domain we are strict. This is a famous concept when it comes to doubts in the laws of Tumah and Tahara, of ritual impureness. Now the question is, does that carry over to the laws of a kohen as well? Meaning that if I'm a kohen and I'm not sure whether or not there's a deceased person on my flight, so can I say, well, listen, there's a lot of people on the flight, there's more than three people, so it's called Rishus Rabim, so therefore I can assume that there's no tumah there, just like if I had a question about ritual impurity, I could assume that. So some say, well, yes, because since this has to do with impurity, and therefore the rules of impurity go according to this rule, that if it's in a public domain, then it's okay, then it applies to here also. And I believe this opinion is quoted in the Sefer Melamed Lahayil, but in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, who was one of the great Rabbanim in Kovna, and he was one of a very important Paisik, and he was lenient about this. Others, however, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein and others, don't look at it like that. They say when it comes to the laws of whether or not something's Tameh, we go according to this lenient idea that if it's in Rishus HaRabim, it's Tar. If it's in a public area, it's okay. When it comes to a kohen's personal prohibition, then it doesn't help. So it's not going to help to assume that it's okay if it's just in a public domain. So again, but these are a number of variables that the Paiskim can discuss as far as different cases, common cases of Tumah. Whether or not it's a non-Jew or not, whether or not, and also how many doubts there are as to whether there's someone else in the same proximity, and then also the fact of if the tumah is not in the same room exactly, but it goes from room to room, if that's a Torah problem or a rabbinic problem. The Kitzur now talks about the relatives that a kohen is allowed to defile himself to become tamei, and he has a mitzvah to do so. And that's what the Kitzur is going to talk about for the remainder of the siman. Mutar kohen l'tama l'krayvim. A kohen is permitted to defile himself to become tamei, to participate in the lovaya, the burial of relatives. Mitzvah l'tama l'hem, and it's a mitzvah for him to do so. These are the relatives. Ishtoi haru'uyulai, a wife that he's allowed to be married to, meaning to say, she'ena psululai, excluding a wife that he's not allowed to marry. Let's say he was married to a grusha, to a divorcee, someone like that, that he does not defile himself for, but otherwise he does. Aviv imai, parents, b'nayubitoi, children, v'achiv achaisai, me'aviv, shahayu b'nei chayoma, siblings from the father's side that are b'nei kayama, that are able to live, meaning to say that they weren't what's called like a kanefa, like a stillborn. And this is what the Kitzur explains, that all suffolk have fallen, but if there's a possibility that the sibling wasn't viable, so ain't a matama, then it's not matama. And this is going to be discussed in the next siman, a little bit more about this concept of the obligation of avelus on a person that's on a baby that's not viable. Now the Kitzur continues, "V'ainim etamal achoisish in a skatchelish," and he does not defile himself for a sister that had kedushin from another person. It's a unique halacha that only before she has kedushin, then he's metama for her. Otherwise, not. Now we are going to see that there is avelus on a married sister. Just not this halacha of defiling himself for participating in the levaya. Kitzur continues. Yesh ayim hadim mutu mitzvah l'tamei l'krayvim. Now the question is, what are the parameters of this mitzvah? So according to one opinion, says the Kitzur, this mitzvah is dafka l'tzarech kvura. It's only for the purpose of helping in burial, or l'havi le'arin v'tachrichin u'chadayma, or to help bring burial shrouds and a casket, v'lachem b'Shabbos, and therefore on Shabbos she yafshel l'kavur b'yayim. Obviously, we can't perform a burial on Shabbos. Also l'tam elay afilu k'dei l'shomrei. Then one is not allowed to defile themselves even to wash it. And it's basically what the question over here is, that we know a kohen is allowed to defile themselves for a relative. The question is, how far-reaching is that permission? Does that mean that basically, for this individual, from the time of death till burial, they can be with them as much as they want, and there's no limit to that? Or it's only things that have to pertain to burial? So the funeral, doing the tara, the actual burial, that they can be involved with. But what about on Shabbos, when obviously, a burial cannot be done, but there is a mitzvah to guard the mace. So then, this permission would not apply. And this is the Kitzur explained. This will be a difference between these two opinions. And the Kitzur says that it's a difference of opinion. Therefore, he recommends being stringent if possible. Miu, l'tzarchei kfura, for the needs of burial, v'ade mitzvah l'tamuhem, that for sure everyone agrees is a mitzvah. V'afil yesh chevra kadisha, must ask him. Now what about today? We have a chevra kadisha that takes care of the arrangements. Even so, v'enoi m'sa'asa klal, so he doesn't need to be busy with it. Mutar lo liyos shem b'bayis, he can still be there in the house. Shem yitzarach lo yisa davar, because maybe they're going to need something. Now, this permission to be metam is only until after burial. Once a person is buried, then they cannot defile themselves to aid in the burial. So again, what we learned in this halacha is that a kohen has a mitzvah to defile himself to become tamei for the seven close relatives, and definitely things having to do with the actual burial and the funeral that he's allowed to do. Extra things like watching the mace and that sort of thing, then that is questionable whether he's allowed to do it. Sif Yud Beis. Kain Shapir Shal Vaisa Medakat Sibar. The mother of Kain, whose parents unfortunately left the path of Torah Mitzvahs, and Metamalahem, he does not defile himself for them. Now we mentioned previously that this is talking about people who did it knowingly and with understanding, not people that were misguided. And also not the one who took their own life. And again, we spoke about that according to many pricing, is limited to someone who was not didn't do it out of pain and out of duress. And all those that we mentioned before are Rishayim, are evil people, and one does not mourn for them, so the Kohen also does not matam himself, he does not defile himself. Sif Yud Gimel. Ein HaKohen matam l'karev, el kishu shalom. This is an important halacha. It says that a Kohen does not defile himself only for a relative if the body is intact. V'lo kishu chaser, that when it's missing something. V'lachin yish aymrim, de'en in the matam l'harug. So therefore, one does not defile himself for someone that was killed. Why? Because unfortunately, in the process of being killed, maybe they lost something. The mikri chaser, because it will be considered missing. V'nochem l'hachmar, and therefore it's proper to be stringent. So if you dalit, yesh kainim hadyotim hanoigim leilich al kibbutz tzaddikim. This is an interesting discussion that there seems to be sources to say that a tzaddik, a great person, a holy person, is not tamei, is not impure, because he's so holy. Now, lahalacha, all the Paiskim understand that, no, there is tumah there, and whatever references there are to such a concept is more figurative than practical, but there are those that follow that understanding, says the Kitzer, and he calls them hadyaitis, he calls them unlearned people, but Amar Meshachivri Yitzadikim Einam Atamim. By, and the reason why they do it is because they say that the graves of great people don't have impureness. V'tos u'biyadam, it's a mistake. V'tzrichim l'mcha islehem, and one should tell them that it's wrong and stop them from doing so. Now, there is a whole interesting question that why, if someone's so great, why would their body have tumah? Why would their body have impureness? And there is a Mishnah in Taurus that the question was asked. Well, a non-Jew doesn't have the same level of tumah as a Jewish person. Now, why is that? You know, if a Jewish person has Torah mitzvahs, has these great things, why is it that they have more impureness? But the basic idea that's explained behind this is that impureness comes from potential, comes from greatness. Now, a person who's very great, and now the neshama leaves the body, so therefore there's a lacking, there's a void there, and that void is in the form of tumah. Whether as someone who never had that potential, never had that greatness in their life, so when their neshama leaves their body, then you don't have the same void, so therefore you don't have the tumah. So sometimes the impureness comes from a void of the potential, of the greatness that was one time there. Sif Tezvav. Kishem Shakoin Muzur Shal Tame. Just as the Kohen himself was not allowed to become impure, kach musharim hagdol malaktanim, he has a prohibition of causing a child, a young Kohen, to become tame. This is very important, because let's say a woman who is married to a Kohen, or is the daughter of a Kohen, does not have the prohibition of becoming tame, becoming impure. However, what about she has a child, a young son, a three-year-old son, let's say, and she's next to a cemetery under the trees, so she has to be careful not to cause this child to go under those trees, because even though the child's a child, and we don't necessarily, and he's not obligated to keep all the mitzvahs, he's not obligated to fast Yom Kippur. However, we can't do something to make him transgress this idea of not defiling his status and becoming tamei. Now the Kitzer explains the source and says, Shinemar Emar Lakehanim Ba'amarto. There's a double expression of speaking to the Kohanim. And we receive Shtei as Amiras, since it's mentioned twice, Dar Shabbos Sinas Rechon Avracha. Chazal learned Lahazag Del Malaktanim, that the older ones have to be careful about the younger ones, and even children, older people need to be careful that they shouldn't come in contact with a dead body. V'dafkal Tamaisim Biadayim. But it's only if the adult actually brings them into the situation of tumah. the Hainu Lahachnis Lalameis, but to bring them into the tent of a deceased. About a katan matal ma'asma, but if the child himself is going there, ain't sichon lafrishay, then the child is only a child, so they don't have a prohibition, and we don't have to stop them either because we're not doing anything. Achim hegil chinuch. But if you got to an age of education, you could understand yesh lafrishay is proper to be mafreshim because there is some sort of obligation that he should understand what he is supposed to get used to doing for when he becomes for later in life. Beishas kaim uberes. Now, the wife of a kain who is pregnant, muteres lekanes b'olameis, she is allowed to go in the olameis in a place where there's a deceased person. It's actually an interesting discussion why this is so. Now, the wife of a kain is allowed to become tame. That's not the problem. The question is maybe the child's going to be a male. So, the strongest reason given why she doesn't have to be careful is because there's a concept of tumah balua. I think we mentioned it elsewhere, that when tumah is swallowed up, it does not have the status of tumah. So therefore, since this child is inside the mother, then the child does not have a problem of being in the same proximity as a deceased person. Let's continue with the final sif, sif tezayin. Ha-kayanim, enim yuchel lachuf krevi ameis. The kayanim, their problem is that when someone dies in the area, their life becomes very inconvenient because they can't be home. So, however, they cannot force the relatives that they should quickly remove the mace, the deceased from the house, in order that they should be able to go home. Why? Because the family has obligation to give respect to the deceased. So therefore, the kohen, just because he's being inconvenienced, cannot force it upon him. Imloy, however, kishakayin hu chayle, but if the kayin's ill, sheni yachalos tzmi beisai, then he can't leave his house, kayfen es akrev lansi es amei, so then already, we force the relatives to remove the deceased, kadesh la yavoy hachayle de isa deraisa, because then they're going to be causing this person, this kayin, who's not well, to transgress an eser tira, because he can't leave his house, because he's ill. Now, if the one that died was a stillborn child, so there's definitely a problem that the stillborn child brings tumah. On the other hand, there's not a real clear obligation of burial and of honoring the body of a deceased child, of a stillborn. Right, a child there is obligation. We're talking about a stillborn. So then already the kain's convenience takes precedence because they don't have a strong obligation to do anything. We hold that halacha l'maaseh, though it should be buried, but to say that there's such a strong obligation that they could take their time at the expense of the kain, that we don't say. And therefore even on Shabbos, where we don't usually bury We usually don't move and a person on Shabbos out of respect to them, but when it's a nafil, when it's a stillborn, so it could be done through a non-Jew, and therefore a kohen has a right to ask that to be done. So this basically concludes some of the laws of tumas kainim, the laws of a kohen being careful about not to defile his holiness, his kedusha by coming in contact with the body of a deceased person.